On today's episode of Good Word, Jared Greenberg joins me to discuss last night's NBA draft, what he feels about the San Antonio Spurs and the New Orleans Pelicans night. We also talk about the greatest draft classes of all time, the Boston Celtics and their teardown, and Jared Greenberg is right. He'll tell you why. All that and much more coming up right now. Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. A bit of business before we get into today's show. Of course, we are on YouTube, so don't forget to rate, review, subscribe to us there, as well as all the places you consume your audio podcast. It is the day after the draft, rather the morning after the draft. My man, Jared Greenberg from TNT Sports, he's going to do his victory lap on something he said a couple of weeks ago. I'm going to give him the floor for that. But Jared, I felt like post-draft, let's get right into it. Did anything
how much makeup do you have on? How much makeup do you have on right now to make up for how late you stayed up last night working?
Where would I have on makeup?
Your face. Your face is where you would have it.
No, I'm good, baby. I'm good, baby. This is how we work. This is how we do. This is how we do, Jared. I'm used to working without sleep. Did you see the NBA finals? Do you remember the finals?
Yeah.
We didn't have sleep in Oklahoma.
That's a good point.
Indianapolis. Thank you. Don't doubt the kid. As we get into the draft, Jared, everything went according to plan by and large. I felt like Cooper Flagg, Dylan Harper, BJ Edgecombe. Were you surprised at anything in the first four or five picks? Was it Ace Bailey going five to Utah? Or was it even Harper going second to San Antonio, even though they have a bunch of point guards?
Yeah, I mean, I'm by no means a draft expert, so this to me followed what a lot of those people who follow the draft year round projected it to be. Maybe not the Ace Bailey component, because he was a bit of an enigma, because we didn't know how teams felt about him because they didn't get an in-person visit with him. They didn't get that workout with him. I went a little bit against the grain. I thought that there was a greater chance that San Antonio was going to shop the pick and entertain the idea of sending out Dylan Harper to try and get a more proven asset to help them win in the next year or two. I'm certainly not here to say that Dylan Harper can't do that, but I think it's a more likely scenario that Dylan Harper's minutes and development is going to be seen potentially in the G League, right? Like it's uncommon for a two pick, but how much playing time is he going to get in real minutes behind Stephon Castle and De'Aaron Fox?
Well, he's 6'6", right?
No, yeah, I get it.
So that means you can throw him out there. Maybe he can play defensively. To me, it's not necessarily about offensively. It's what positions can you guard?
Yeah.
I think he's big enough to be able to guard some threes. And maybe, you know, quickness and everything else, maybe you're going to have to figure out some stuff defensively there. But I'm not as worried about him playing. And the Spurs don't have any pressure to win. I will give you
a little bit. I disagree with that.
They don't have pressure to win right now.
Well, listen, if we're talking about a championship, you're right. They don't have a pressure to win a championship. They have a pressure to make the playoffs. They have a pressure to make a massive leap this year. Victor Wembanyama is getting that third-year itch, right? Like, that's a real thing that's coming about. This dude is focused on winning. And I think people within the organization, this is not a report, this is a thought, I think people within the organization are starting to recognize that we've got to do things to lay the foundation that we're doing everything to not kick the can down the road, that we are serious about winning. Yes, we can bring in young players. Yes, we could develop. But at the same time, we got to focus on the bigger picture. And the Spurs better make the playoffs this year. And I would think that they would even want to be a team that's outside of that play-in realm, right? They want to be a top six team.
Okay, look.
And I don't know if that's realistic, but Victor Wembanyama wants that.
Of course, everybody wants that, Jared. Now, here's the thing. Here's the thing we got to be careful about. Remember, everybody was looking at Oklahoma City a short 3 years ago and saying, what's happening there? You guys have two losing seasons in a row. Are you going through the process? And then all it took was 1 year to get into the play-in, 1 year in the second round, and then you're in the NBA Finals. They had two losing seasons there.
Massive.
In the post.
Massive difference. Massive difference. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander today was not Shai Gilgeous-Alexander back in those back-to-back years when they won 46 total games. Okay? Victor Wembanyama is today what we think he's going to be. There's a difference, right?
Yeah,
Victor Wembanyama has the chance to run away for the next 10 years with Defensive Player of the Year and compete each one of those years for MVP.
Right.
You've got to make sure you're committed and doing everything possible to surrounding him with the best possible cast of characters that he can lead to the playoffs year in and year out. We can talk about championships later, right? This doesn't have to be a black and white league that everybody tries to make it out to be, where it's either championship or top pick in the draft. There is a middle ground, and the Spurs have to be there. They've got to get themselves out of this lottery conversation to appease Victor Wembanyama.
Now, Jared, I'm going to ask you two questions. Are you ready? And I'm not going to treat you like a hostile witness, but I'm going to ask you two questions because during our last podcast, you treated me and my audience like hostile witnesses. So I'm going to start here.
Was there any waterboarding? Because I don't remember this.
No waterboarding.
Okay.
How many games did Big Vic play last year?
Like 40-something.
46 games, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So he's got to make sure. Now, that was, you know, blood clot, weird stuff. I'm not saying
that he
didn't
get himself
right.
He was on pace to play over 70 games.
Right. But you're saying there's the urgency there. We got to make sure that he can stay on the floor. Like, you have to make sure that everything's being done so that he's available. I'm not even saying that's on him. I'm saying that's organizationally. I think they were going to be fine. Secondarily, didn't they make a big trade last year?
Yeah, of course.
They traded for De'Aaron Fox last year, so it's not like they were kicking the can down the road. They saw an opportunity. They saw a disgruntled De'Aaron Fox who had a trade request, and they made a move to go get him. Now, we didn't get a chance to see it all coming to fruition because of the injury, but they've been trying. You got the rookie of the year, Steph Castle. They had Chris Paul last year. What are they going to do with Keldon Johnson and Devin Vassell and Jeremy Sochan? Yes, those are questions, but those aren't nobodies. I think they came into the number two pick. They weren't out here stumbling. They're not the Charlotte Hornets. I think just because they got the second pick by virtue of a lottery, not by virtue of having the second worst record in the league, gives LaCrosse the wrong impression. Am I right?
100%. I'm not trying to be a revisionist of history here. What I'm trying to do is look forward with this and simply say that Victor Wembanyama is good enough to be the best player on a playoff team year in and year out. And he's going to grow tired of not being in the postseason if this team continues to fail. And all I questioned simply was, should they have entertained the idea? Should they have taken a more serious look at acquiring a veteran, somebody who could come in and guarantee them that they can contribute to a playoff push this year and next year, as opposed to Dylan Harper, who may have a higher ceiling than said veteran, but it may be 3 or 4 years before you see the fruits of that labor?
I'm not necessarily saying I'm against you. I will say this, in the 46 games he played last year, the Spurs were 21-25. Now, that's nothing to write home about. That's not Western Conference playing territory. But they were competitive with Victor Wembanyama. And you look at the years of maturity that you're going to do and natural roster construction that's going to change. I don't think that in today's second apron NBA, and you are the small market San Antonio Spurs, that you trade a cost-controlled number two pick for a proven veteran. If you want to get a proven veteran, you can go trade the Sochans, the Keldon Johnsons, one of those guys, and maybe package him with something that you got. You don't give up the number two pick. That is far too valuable. And I give you another reason why. Another piece of evidence, excuse me. The Brooklyn Nets, who had 5 first-round draft picks, were looking to get to the number two draft pick from everything that I was told leading up into it, but the Spurs wouldn't budge. Now, are you telling me that you would rather have Dylan, you wouldn't have Dylan Harper, but you would take, you would go down and say, I'll take 8-22 or something like that?
No. I wouldn't have done that. I would have.
Good. Good.
And I know we're going to talk Boston later, but like the level of deal I'm talking about here is, you know, some sort of package of the number two pick and those young guys, you know, that you're talking
about. For Jaylen Brown?
For Jaylen Brown.
Saying?
Yeah. Like, and I'm not saying Boston would do that. I'm saying that's the level of deal that I'd be thinking of. Right.
Got you.
Yeah, I'm not taking the things that helped the Nets become one of the worst teams in basketball back for me. You know, I'm talking about a guy that you know you could plug into that starting lineup today at the three spot, at the four spot, depending four or five, depending where you want to play Vic, and help you get to be at the very least a mid-tier Western. Like, would you agree with this statement? It is a failure if the Spurs don't make the playoffs this year.
Failure in the Western Conference? This is a disappointment. It would be a disappointment. I think you can have the expectation.
Dude, we're talking about the dude who's going to walk into this season as the odds-on favorite to win Defensive Player of the Year, and be, I would imagine, I'm not a gambling expert, but I would imagine he's going to be in the top five mix for MVP, like preseason.
As he should, yes.
Right. You've got that guy that's going to be in contention for two of the biggest awards in the NBA heading into the season, and you don't think it's a failure if they miss the playoffs?
Now, you just said you don't want this to be this very binary black and white thing. And yet, when I said it would be a disappointment,
that's semantics. You're making it semantics now.
No.
You're a wordsmith. You know, you think you're a fancy writer that puts together all these big-time words and, you know, colloquials and all these things that make us people feel like we're dumber because you're smart. I'm not a smart man, but I know this, that if the Spurs don't make the playoffs in Victor Wembanyama's third year, it will be a disappointment, a failure, whatever word you want to use.
Failure means someone's going to get fired. Disappointment means, oh, we got some stuff to work on.
Remember, I'll tell you this. If the Spurs don't make the playoffs this year, that roster will look 180 degrees different.
I guarantee you the roster is going to look 180 degrees different anyway. I'm saying the roster changes that you're talking about do not have to involve the number two pick. I'm saying disappointment in the crowded Western Conference where all these teams are going for it, that means you can afford to be opportunistic. Everybody's chasing Oklahoma City. If teams are chasing them, that means you could wind up finding yourself in a second apron trying to compete. And as we're going to talk about with the Boston Celtics, you find yourself in a second apron, you wind up having to trade players that you really like and put them into situations where teams who are advantageous and smart with the cap can go and get really good players for half the price. That's what I'm saying. You have to be prudent in team building in a hard-capped NBA. Whether people want to admit it or not, Jared, this is a hard-capped NBA. And in a hard-capped NBA, teams have to be very smart, especially if you are in a smaller market where you do not attract free agents. That means you have to nail your draft picks, not trade your draft picks, Jared. Can we move forward?
Yes.
Thank you. Now, because I wanted to get your thoughts on the Philadelphia 76ers, because you've spent time around that franchise. I feel like you spent time around Philly and the Clippers, the two can't-get-right franchises in the NBA over the past few years. They kept their pick. Now, if you told me Philly traded their pick, I could easily understand that one a little bit better. I wouldn't want to trade it either, but I would understand your point. Were you surprised at where they went in the draft? Were you surprised that they didn't take Ace Bailey with all the nonsense swirling around him and that they wound up taking VJ Edgecombe?
Well, I'm actually proud of Philadelphia. I'm proud didn't take Ace Bailey because, again, ceiling through the roof, everything you read, everyone you talk to, like there's a chance. I think people genuinely feel, again, those who study this year-round and make it their business, feel that Ace Bailey has a chance to be the second best pro in this draft. But I'm not taking a shot at the guy's character. I'm taking a shot at what we know, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And there were accountability issues in this process leading up to last night. The 76ers of every team in the NBA cannot afford to have another person in their locker room that they think might have accountability issues. Again, Ace Bailey, great, everything I've heard, great guy, great teammate, but, and he may, and there may not be a single accountability issue with him as a pro, but the Sixers of any team cannot afford to take that risk with what we heard coming out of that locker room and the other stuff that you and I know about that has not yet been reported about that organization over the last decade. Okay, so that's number one. But number two, on the flip side, on the non-Ace Bailey component, I was shocked. I'll dial it back. Not shocked. But anytime you're talking about Daryl Morey, a trade is always in play. He is Trader Daryl for a reason, right? Like he goes out and is known to be the most aggressive general manager of any in the league. And that's not an indictment. That's not a compliment. That's just what it is.
Right.
I'll play this. I'm going to pump the brakes on Philadelphia a little bit because I don't know anything. I don't have any reporting on this, but I would be absolutely stunned if we get through the next 2.5 weeks and there's not been a move by Daryl Morey. Like, I find it hard to believe that you're going to go into training camp with the same roster and the same coach and just feel like everything's going to be fine.
Just run it back.
I mean, the only argument to that, if you want to play devil's advocate, is the East is so weird right now that maybe we can continue to be dysfunctional and keep our head above water because everybody else has got worse problems than us in terms of so many stars are going to be out and questions loom. Like, that's a big risk to take. But maybe this is one year where that can work. I disagree with it. I play the card that brought Daryl Morey to the dance, right? Dance with who you brought. Be a trader. Make a move. Do something to try and improve this roster.
Well, that would indicate, excuse me, that Daryl takes some accountability for what has happened in Philadelphia. And I'm not sure if he is ready to do that. The thing with Edgecombe, and just going to the pick, and we'll get to Philly in their path later, right? Quentin Grimes, free agent. Yabusele, free agent. You're not sure if you're going to be able to actually afford them going into next season. Remember, Embiid is on a big max. Paul George is on a big max. Maxey on a not-so-big max just because of his years of service. They have to be very, very smart financially with how they do things. So you couldn't afford to take a huge question mark. Edgecombe, I believe, can play right away. That's a positive for him. He gets up and down. He can defend. He can be, in theory, what you wanted Paul George to be on the defensive end, and then you realize, oh, Paul George is 35 years old. You can't expect him to be a lockdown defender every night. Okay, fine. To your point, it's a lot easier for the Philadelphia 76ers to say, Milwaukee's a question mark. Indiana's a question mark. Boston's a question mark. Nobody believes in Cleveland. Orlando hasn't proven it. Detroit hasn't proven it. And New York doesn't have a coach. Why not us? I would say, why not you for a variety of reasons, but I would understand their thought process of them saying, why not us, right? Yeah. So I get it. I just don't believe in the health of Joel Embiid, the health and age of Paul George. I do believe in Tyrese Maxey, but I don't know if I believe in much of anything else in terms of roster flexibility. At some point, you got to start looking forward towards the future. And all these draft picks, Jared, with the exception of number one, because Cooper Flagg is going to come in and help now and in the future.
Yep.
All these draft picks, you have to look at them in the vein of not what these teams are, but what these teams are going to try to be as time moves forward. That's why I'm very curious, Jared, what you thought of the New Orleans Pelicans and their night trading away a 2026 unprotected draft pick to have two first rounders this season, in addition to some of the moves that they've made over the past couple of days, shipping off CJ McCollum, getting in Jordan Poole and Sadiq Bey. What did you make of the New Orleans Pelicans night?
I've been debating on whether I'm going to say this because I believe it. I just know how it's going to be perceived. This was Luka Doncic level bad.
Ooh.
This was malpractice.
Ooh.
And we can like the people who are making these decisions. But let's just start with this. To trade away essentially two first rounders, right? You flop this year, and then you give away an unprotected 2026 first round pick. Let's start with this conversation before I get into the context of all of this.
Mm-hmm.
How good does Derek Queen have to be to even begin to scratch the surface of justifying what you just did? Like, does he have to start? Does he have to be a starter? Does he have to, in the end, be a multi-time all-star? Does he have to be a Hall of Famer? And if we start at the very beginning, you've told us that you're committed to Zion. And maybe you're lying, and maybe you have a deal in place, or you're investigating a deal, which I would hope you are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How, in what world, listen, I can preach on positionless basketball. I can talk about, I love putting the best five players on the court. I'm all about that. But in what basketball world does Derek Queen and Zion Williamson play on the same team?
That's a good one. I will say this. Troy Weaver is now a prominent member. He's second in command in New Orleans, right?
I know where you're going with this.
You know, do you know where I'm going with this?
The ties to...
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
No. I'm going to his own personal history, which he did a couple of years ago, right? When he was in Detroit, I believe it was the 2022 draft, everyone thought that he was going to go reach for Jalen Duren at 5. He wanted Jalen Duren. He thought that was like his guy. Everybody knew Duren was his guy. Duren was, I don't even think he was 18 yet. But Jalen Duren, a big man out of Memphis, was his guy. They wound up going with Jaden Ivey at 5 and getting Duren in a trade, I want to say at 11 or 13. I can't remember the exact
trade. Traded with the Knicks, right, I think?
Yeah. So they wound up getting two first-round picks that season, kicking the other first-round pick down the road, and that first-round pick came to be this year, I think, with the Timberwolves at 14 or 15. And the question you wind up asking yourself is, would you rather have Jalen Duren or that player at 15 or 16 this year? Like, I wish I had the draft, like, in front of me. Maybe I get in the break so we can, you know, complete the circle. But that's the question that you ask. And if you are a firm believer in Derek Queen, and as an executive for another team told me last night, either he's going to be a beast or he's going to be overseas because he doesn't get it. That is a ultimate boom or bust. And when you are a team like the Pelicans, and you just talked about San Antonio and some of these lower revenue teams, some of these smaller market teams having to take risks, maybe this was a calculated risk for them, considering the fact that you have Zion Williamson, who you can't trust yet. If at all, yet. Can't trust him at all.
Right, you can't trust him at all. But like, they're, listen, I'm not claiming to be on the phone between New Orleans and Atlanta last night.
Mm-hmm.
But there had to be something else that would have gotten Atlanta to move 10 picks back. Because Atlanta seemed to get the guy that they wanted. And at 23. Newell,
right.
At 23. I don't know that you had to. Listen, I'm not crushing Derek Queen. I'm just saying to give when. Listen, in every scenario, like if we did one of those like computer simulator things where they put up 1,000 different outcomes, in all 1,000 outcomes, the Pelicans are not making the playoffs. It is 1,000 for 1,000. They are not making the playoffs next year. with Zion, if they trade Zion, if they flip Jordan Poole, if they keep Jordan Poole, they are not a playoff team. They are going to need that pick next year. So in order to justify not having their first round lottery pick, Derek Queen needs to be a Hall of Famer next year. And like the fit is what, like, you have to love this guy so much. So going back to the point, like, Atlanta wouldn't have done this deal if it was top three or top five protected.
Like, you didn't give yourself any sort of protection on any pillow on this.
That's the issue. New Orleans is not making the playoffs next year. It's a combination of the West being an absolute monster and the Pelicans roster being an absolute dumpster fire. Those two things don't mesh. And you now have said our best ability to add talent in the future is gone. Like, you're not signing a free agent, even if you had the cap space. Whatever you ultimately trade Zion for is going to be pennies on the dollar. Jordan Poole may be the next best basketball player, but you're certainly not getting value for him. Like, what is your belief that you told us last night, if you're New Orleans, is that Derek Queen is going to be a freaking Hall of Famer in this league? And he better be. He better be.
What I will say is this. I think I did like them taking Jeremiah Fears at getting a point guard. I think I do like that. I understand your point, Jared. I understand your righteous indignation. I completely get it. I don't think that you are that off base, especially with all the question marks on the roster. I like parts of the roster better than most. I love Herb Jones. I love Trey Murphy. Like, yeah. I get that. Like, those are the players. Those are winning players.
Jose Alvarado.
Those are winning players who are not in winning situations.
Yeah.
And you have to get, and you have to make your situation a winnable situation before those guys just get so frustrated. I'm 100% with you. I think Jeremiah Fears is going to be a good player, and I think he's going to be a good player really fast. But I'm with you. I'm with you on Derek Queen. You got to give yourself some level of protection, like both philosophical protection and practical protection.
Yeah.
As far as next season turning into a disaster and you don't have a first round draft pick, unless you're going to get some level of first back in a deal for Trey Murphy, in a deal for Herb Jones, in a deal for Zion Williamson, which will not be out of the question, Jared. Let's see how the rest of the summer plays out. Right.
Not only that, like the Zion deal that you're talking about, that's I think inevitable here, whether it's in the next 2 weeks or before the trade deadline. Now it feels like teams have the Pelicans by the you-know-what. And in order to get a 2026 first-round pick back, they may be forced to include a Herb Jones or a Trey Murphy to recoup some of those assets. Like, they are in such a bad spot right now. And let me just add to the Fears spot, like, and I'm with you, you know, seems like sky's through the roof, could be a great guy, but he's not a shooter. And could he become one? Yes. You know, he was second in the SEC, Fears, in free throw attempts last year, which means this is a guy that gets into the paint. Love it. Great, conceptually. But now you look at the roster, who else gets into the paint? Oh, Zion takes more shots from the restricted area than anybody in the NBA. Derek Queen doesn't shoot threes. Derek Queen took 35 three-pointers last year. He made 20% of them. So now your three building blocks for the future, and forget about Jordan Poole, like what are you doing with him? But Fears, Zion, and Queen are all paint cloggers and all individually are great, but how do they fit on the same basketball court?
Let's see if Derek Queen is a starter next year. Let's see where Zion.
He better be a starter. Like,
Could you imagine in New Orleans? You know, all like 15,000 people that care. Like, if Derrick Green's not a starter.
How's New Orleans, the city of New Orleans, catching a stray from you, Derrick Greenberg? How are you doing that? That's not fair.
Could you imagine if he's not a starter and the Hawks get the number one overall pick?
Well, the Hawks ain't getting no number one pick.
You don't think the Pelicans can win the lottery next year and convey that pick to the Hawks?
They won't.
Why?
They won't.
Why?
Because they won't. Because they won't. That ain't happening next year.
Have you read the script? Like, what? Tell me.
Yeah, I've read the script. That ain't happening, Jared. Don't you worry about that. You know, that is one less thing that you have to worry about. I would say, let's see what happens. Let's see what happened with Zion Williamson. I know they've been saying all the right things about, hey, we want to keep him, we want to build around him. And I believe that that could be the case. But let's see if they get an offer or they get an opportunity to get off of him and his long money, and even with the contingencies around that money. Let's see if he can get off of that money, and let's see where they go from there. I'm not out yet, but I get it. But I get you.
Dakota, your producer, who's, by the way, maybe the best podcast producer in the business. Can we mark this right now? Vin, I want to keep this in perpetuity.
Okay.
You are telling me that worst case scenario, it is not even in the realm of possibility. It's not a mathematical possibility that the Pelicans could win the draft lottery in May of 2026 and convey the number one overall pick to the Atlanta Hawks. Not even a mathematical possibility.
It ain't happening.
There's a difference between you don't believing it's happening and it could happen, and that being a through line in New Orleans for the entire season. Yes or no?
Read my lips. It ain't happening. Are you done treating me like a hostile witness, Jared Greenberg?
I wish I was able to waterboard right now.
When we come back, we're going to talk to Jared about the Boston Celtics in their fire sale. Welcome back to The Good Word here with Jared Greenberg. Jared, the Boston Celtics needed to get out of second apron territory. In fact, Brad Stevens was like, man, I didn't realize how real the second apron was until a few days ago. And he went and got to work. Kristaps Porzingis, gone. Jrue Holiday, gone. Could Jaylen Brown be moved? We heard about a few teams being interested in him on draft night. Ultimately, the Celtics stayed put. Derek White is still there. What do you think of the Celtics? What do you think of a championship contender, a champion being deconstructed piece by piece, especially as they wait on Jason Tatum to recover from Achilles surgery?
Yeah, I'm going to give them an incomplete so far because I think that there's more to be done. And I think the maneuvering has been pretty seamless. I mean,
it's easy. He did it very easy. He just found a team, bop, bop, beam, bada boom.
Like the whole, I'm confused by Portland. I get trying to get out from underneath Anthony Simons, but it feels to me like Portland's got this pressure now to start to kick it into gear and try and win. Are they going to try and flip Jrue Holiday for the second time? Remember, because they got Jrue Holiday in the Milwaukee Damian Lillard deal and then send him to Boston. If you were to start, like, I'm sure Brad Stevens and Mike Zarin and all that accomplished crew in Boston had like 7 or 8 different plans probably to get off from the salaries. And I would imagine the one that they would have they probably wouldn't have wanted to do any of them, right? But ultimately had to. The two guys you'd want to start with are an aging Jrue Holiday and a Kristaps Porzingis, who, when healthy and available, is great for your team, but with the question marks you're going to have for your roster this upcoming season, and and the lack of dependability that Porzingis presents for you, of course he's the next guy to go after Holiday. And you know, I'm not making light of this, but like when Kristaps Porzingis gets announced in Atlanta, everyone's celebrating what Atlanta has done, right? I just did a whole rant on how great that trade was with New Orleans. But the right. first, second, and third questions at that Kristaps Porzingis press conference better be about his health and his availability. And has there been closure and has there been discovery and closure to what went wrong with Porzingis last year with this mystery illness? Like, did they figure out what's wrong? Do they know how to treat it? Is it coming back? Is it a question mark? And by the way, that doesn't even speak to all the physical ailments that he's had over the years. Everybody's ready to, you know, paint Atlanta as a team that could be a sleeping giant in the East with this incredible starting lineup. Not if Porzingis only plays 30 games. They're not.
No, look, I think one thing, and I said this last night on our live show, if you haven't, go check that out in Yahoo Sports. Me, Kevin O'Connor, King McClure, Ice Young. You're not, if you're going to have Trae Young on your team, you better have length behind him to help cover up all the defensive ills, right? So not only do you have Dyson Daniels, Jalen Johnson, like you got the length, right? You have all the length in the world, all the rim protection, you know, the wings. Like, I'm 100% with you. I'm in on what the Atlanta Hawks are doing conceptually with the Boston Celtics. It makes me feel a little queasy. I'm not going to lie to you, Jared. And the queasiness comes from just the structure of this. And I know that we love the fact that there, we love the fact that, Jared, there are seven teams that have won the title in 7 years. And we get all these new teams and faces in the finals and everything else. But there feels something unsettling to me that a team that had built itself the right way.
Yep.
Right? That we tell teams, you make smart trades, you nail your draft picks, you're opportunistic in free agency and in the trade market, and you find yourself a year ago winning a championship rather easily, right? You didn't cheat your way to a title. And then you were lined up this year before the injuries, which would have happened anyway. Maybe they would have gotten knocked out in the second round anyway by the Knicks. The Knicks were just a buzzsaw, you know, in those games. But you positioned yourself to be good enough to be good again year after year after year. And because of the rules of the second apron, because of the legislated mediocrity of this NBA, excellence is now being legislated out, and I don't like it.
No, I'm with you. Greatness. Greatness is being reprimanded. Greatness is like,
yes.
I agree, man. And I think the NBA miscalculated this massively. But One quick thing. I do want to speak to that. Remember when Brad Stevens came in for Doc Rivers and the reason we were told that Doc Rivers was ready to move on from Boston was because he didn't want to be part of a rebuild after winning a championship and contending for others.
Mm-hmm.
Boston never hit the floor. They never did what Oklahoma City did a few years ago. They never did certainly what Philadelphia did during
the
early...
They had a 23-win season. They had a bad year. That first year in Boston,
it wasn't intentional,
year.
Though.
Well, when you trade Garnett and Pierce and Allen walks, you're going to be bad.
Right. No question. But I would say that I give this an incomplete with Boston because I believe this roster, if it stays as is today, based on what we know about the East, and again, a lot could change, they're still a playoff team to me. Like, Jaylen Brown still could be the best player on the... Derek White is still sensational. You know, you'll see that they have a massive question mark in the middle. Like, do they bring back Horford and Cornette? Do they go out and get... Like, they've got to get not only a starting center, because you're not going to start Horford, you've got to get some depth there. There's no question. But the combination of Brown, White, Pritchard, you know, and some of these other guys, depending on who's there, I think is still going to be a team. They're not going to compete for a title. I think they're a playoff team. But to circle back to what you're saying, yes, this is the biggest failure of the CBA. And I've spoken to team executives about this. I've spoken to league executives about this. And it boggles my mind that the one provision that the owners and players did not put into the CBA is rewarding teams and taking care of teams who draft well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I know where you're going.
I think we should absolutely be penalizing teams who are simply going out there and trying to trade their way or sign their way to a championship. The whole point of this CBA was to prevent the Donald Sterlings and the Jim Dolans of the world from coming in and spending freely without getting penalized, not only financially, but prohibitively with trades and draft picks and future signings and all this stuff. All that, I'm fine. But I wish there would have been some sort of provision. And I have ideas on how they could have done it. And it could have been done a million ways. But teams that you should not be penalized for guys that you draft or you acquire on draft night grow organically and then have to pay. Like, that's what your fan base wants. That's what the NBA should want. Now, if you want to tell me you acquired a guy 4 years into him playing in the NBA, or you're telling me a superstar demands his way out, yeah, I don't think those guys and those teams should be rewarded. But I think you should not be penalized for growing a roster. And think about it. The, you know, two of the guys that were acquired by trade, Porzingis and Holiday, they're the guys that are out. Brown and Tatum are still there. Pritchard and Hauser are still there. But yeah, I'm not shutting the door on Brad Stevens yet. I don't think this is a full-on tank. I don't think that they're waving the white
flag. It's not a tank, it's a gap year.
I don't think it's a gap year yet. Now, if they trade Jaylen Brown, I'll wave the white flag on you. But I don't think that they are waving the white flag on this season. I think that they know they can still be very competitive with this roster.
No, Jared, I don't think you're wrong with Brad Stevens. I don't count anything out with him as far as the Jaylen Brown stuff, but I'm 100% with you on the provisions that teams did not give themselves for being able to somehow not have incumbent players in their contracts or their max contracts or whatever it is count against the cap. Like, they gave themselves an amnesty provision in 2005 to protect themselves against bad deals that they signed. I'm surprised that in this CBA, they didn't protect themselves with the good decisions that they've made, but clearly they didn't want to. That's a weird thing. Now, speaking of teams doing stuff, saying weird stuff, I present to you the Denver Nuggets. Jared, you're smiling. Why are you smiling, Jared?
Because I think this is one of the more polarizing stories that came out this week.
Okay. Go ahead and give me what do you think, Jared?
Continue on with it. I'll jump on here.
Look, team president Josh Kroenke, when he was introducing, you know, his new executive team, you know, came out and just on a stream of consciousness and was saying, you know, I don't want, you know, some bad or catastrophic injury to happen. And then, you know, you have to think about the unthinkable, which is trading number 15. Like, nobody's ever thought or asked the question, hey, what are the conditions that would cause you to trade Nikola Jokic? That was just an interesting, why you saying that, moment. Jared, you clearly have a different thought behind that because you wanted to. So tell me what you're thinking.
So I've taken in a lot of content on this from people who are either questioning how intentional those comments were they reckless, were they thought out, why would you put it out there that you would even entertain the idea of Jokic, people saying, if anything, you would come out and say, under no circumstances would we ever trade not only the greatest player in our franchise's history, but maybe the greatest player of this era and a guy who's got a chance to be one of the 10 or 15 greatest players of all time based on what he's done over the last several years. I'm with all of that, except I think, now you don't have to agree with Josh Kroenke, you don't have to agree with me, but I think it was very intentional. I think it was well thought out. I think he came into this press conference with every idea of saying exactly that. I think Josh Kroenke was trolling the Boston Celtics. Think about this. What reputation has the Kroenke family developed, at least in our NBA world, right? He's got the NFL world and the soccer world. I can't speak to that. In our world, particularly with the heat that came upon, and this is underreported stuff, but for those of us in the weeds, you and I, about the hirings of Ben Tenzer as general manager and what stories that's uncovered over the years about how Tim Connelly got the job, how Calvin Booth got the job before him, how Tim Connelly got the job before him, how Masai Ujiri got the job before him. All of those guys who are accomplished human beings at their profession now were not at the time that Josh Kroenke hired them. And the thought that was, and the reporting is, that Kroenke hires guys that don't have the resume because he can underpay them.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this thought that the Nuggets are a frugal organization. And usually it's a word much more harsh than frugal.
Cheap.
Right. And the way I heard those comments, and maybe I'm just being naive, is Josh Kroenke was trolling all of us. He was saying, you guys think I'm cheap. Well, look at the Boston Celtics. They're on their way to a dynasty. They won a title over the last couple of years. Guess who else won a title over the last couple of years? Us. We won a title over the last couple of years. Their best player just went down for a year, and they're in tax hell. Luxury tax hell. And what did they have to do? They had to dismantle their team because of that. I'm just letting you know, we won a title too. We're not dismantling our team. But if one of our guys goes down, the only way to build back up is to tear it down. Just to let you know, it's out there. I thought he was trolling all of us. And he was trolling the Boston Celtics.
You went full big brain. And I don't know if he thought that deep onto it. You went full big brain, Jared Greenberg. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying there's not a point to trolling the Boston Celtics. You don't gain anything from saying such an ambiguous statement that you got to go layer after layer after layer of uncovering to get to the root of what you were saying. If I got to do all that, if I got to do all that thinking, that means you have no business saying it. Even if what you're saying is good intention.
I get you, but do you agree with this? Do you agree with this fact, though? Like, they're the last two NBA champions.
Yes.
Right? And yes. Boston has this reputation of spending and caring about dynasty and all of that stuff. And yet, they're the one tearing it down. And we won a title right before them. And we're not doing it. You know, you're giving us crap. You're giving us crap for not paying front office members, for letting Bruce Brown go, for letting Jeff Green go, for letting Kentavious Caldwell Pope go.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, are you giving them crap? We won a title just before them. How come we're the team that's cheap when they're the one that's ripping it down piece by piece?
Because right after a championship, you didn't even run it back. The Celtics, if nothing else, ran it back the next full season to give those guys a chance to repeat. And also, the Boston Celtics are going through an ownership change. And also, the Boston Celtics were in not just first tax apron, second tax apron. The Denver Nuggets never made it that deep into it to be able to have those discussions to say, we're sitting at the same table as the Boston Celtics while being called cheap. You're never going to call the Boston Celtics cheap on any front, by and large. So I get what you're saying. Maybe the intent was to troll, but baby, we talking about apples and applesauce. It is not the same. Jared, you never had applesauce before? You ever had applesauce before? You probably did get applesauce at some point in your life. When we come back, time for the last word. time for the last word with Jared Greenberg. Jared, before I give you the floor to gloat, because you have clearly earned the right to gloat, whenever we talk about draft classes, we have to have the greatest of all time draft class discussion. So there's four entries into the list. There is 2003, that's LeBron, that's D. Wade, that's Chris Bosh, that's Carmelo Anthony. Pretty strong draft class. There's 84, Jordan, Barkley, Olajuwon, Stockton, Sam Bowie. You know, like, pretty strong draft class in itself. 96, which has become a lot of people's holy grail with Allen Iverson, Ray Allen, Marcus Camby, Kerry Kittles, the late Kobe Bryant, Steve Nash. Pretty, pretty strong draft class. And then there's a low-key late entry into the chat. Jared Greenberg, 2018, reigning MVP, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Finals participant last year, Luka Doncic. Colin Sexton, Jaren Jackson Jr., DeAndre Ayton, Jalen Brunson, Michael Porter Jr., Trae Young. What you thinking? What jumps out to you historically?
Yeah, I mean, I think
does 2018 have a stronger case than we're giving it credit for?
No.
Okay.
I was just asking. I think the winner is always going to be 84 because it has not only the star power up top led by Jordan, which is enough said, right? But
right.
But it also, like, there's plenty of depth in that class too, right? It's not only Jordan and Olajuwon and Barkley and Stockton Hall of Famers, but, you know, guys that were more than serviceable in the NBA for years. Kevin Willis, Sam Perkins, Jerome Kersey, Alvin Robertson.
Otis Thorpe.
Yeah. You know. Vern Fleming.
You got some guys.
Again, not you know, Sam Bowie, you know, obviously was limited, but still, you know, got the heat for being the number two pick, but still was an okay NBA player.
Right.
96 to me has an incredible up front, you know, with obviously Iverson, Kobe, Nash, Ray Allen, Marbury, Antoine Walker. Some sneaky ones, Peja Stojakovic, Jermaine O'Neal, Jujunas Ilgauskas, Derek Fisher, one of the great winners of our game, Marcus Camby.
Are you talking yourself into 96?
No, I still think it's 84 with those four Hall of Famers. I mean, both of them have those four Hall of Famers up front, but I'm going 84. I still have, again, talk about PTSD. I have PTSD from 96. I'm still mad at John Calipari growing up in North Jersey as a New Jersey Nets fan. I mean, I love Kerry Kittles. Great dude. Great socks. But
what do you have against the skinny dudes, Jared Greenberg?
I wanted the other skinny dude on my team.
The other skinny dude was Kobe Bryant, y'all. That was the draft story about John Calipari won the draft, Kobe Bryant, but was basically spooked out of it by Arn Tellem, who was Kobe's agent at the time. So I'm with you. 2003 has some great, great players, but just literally at the top. It was just so top heavy.
Right.
84 has the GOAT. It has the most maybe physically unique player in Charles Barkley, has arguably maybe the third best center of all time in Hakeem Olajuwon, has a top 10 point guard in John Stockton. Like you said, has some depth all around, like 96, Steve Nash is a two-time MVP, Kobe Bryant. Like, 96 is deeper than you think. I just would say 84 has more top-heavy guys. And 2018, not going to sleep on 2018. 2018 will be a historically great draft by the time. So if you get three all-pros currently.
By the way, you know, one of the coolest stories of the 84 draft, you know who was in there that was just in the NBA Finals? This is a good one.
As what, a referee?
Nope.
Oh, Rick?
Not Leon Wood. Yeah, Rick Carlisle. Rick Carlisle was taken 70th overall by Boston.
That's right. And he started hanging out with Larry Bird. And it's never worked out better for him since then. Because hanging out with Larry Bird always seems to work out.
Yep.
Now, Jerry Greenberg, the last time you were here, you said something was going to happen. Oh, that was the last time you were here. Okay.
You know, I'm you know, behind Bomani Jones, I'm the second most used guest on this program. But yet, you know, when you send out all these, you know, pictures and stuff of, you know, your favorite guest and most popular guest that you have on, I'm never on any of these pictures you put out there. But I clearly give out the best takes.
Jerry Greenberg, actually, you're on more than Bomani. So don't short yourself. You're on more than Bo.
Yeah, he's on but all the promotional items, though.
I don't control the promotional
items. I know what it is.
What is it, Jared? What is it?
I get it.
Just let me know what it is.
No.
Thank you.
No.
Okay. All right, cool. Now, with that being said, Jared, I was trying to open it up to give you the floor because you were right about something a couple times ago on the podcast. So go ahead, Jared. Tell everybody why you were right.
Well, let me start with this. And the social media heat's fine. That's part of the job. It's fine. I don't mind it. In fact, I love it. Particularly now, I love it because all y'all were wrong, right? And you were wrong because Dakota, again, best podcast producer in the game, sent out a clip right before the start of the playoffs where you and I were talking about essentially what happens to Houston. What goes on with Houston beyond this postseason? And I received all this vitriol of people saying that it's amazing. Like, people think sourcing on Twitter is what they listen to on another podcast. Other podcasts told you because they were lied to. And I'm not saying that they didn't get this information from good sources, but these podcasts and writers and reporters who are great at their job were lied to. They were told for the last year that the Houston Rockets were not going to break up this core for a star. They were not going to bring in a veteran. They were worried about a timeline. And I simply said on your podcast leading into the playoffs that if and when the Houston Rockets had an early first-round exit, which they did, they would have a knee-jerk reaction to go bring in a proven veteran to help accelerate the winning process. And I simply said, I thought that would be a mistake. And I received so much heat for it. Not only was I spot on that they went out and brought in Kevin Durant, and granted, they didn't have to break up Amen Thompson, Alperen Şengün, but I will say this, going into the playoffs, you would have included Jalen Green in that conversation. It just so happened that the dude forgot how to shoot a basketball.
I wouldn't have. I wouldn't
going
have.
Going into the playoffs, ahead. you would have casually
No, I
put
wouldn't
him...
have. No, I wouldn't have. I'm telling you what I wouldn't do. Telling you what I wouldn't do, but go ahead.
Okay. But my point is this. Kevin Durant in a different world could be... Kevin Durant in this world is still a great player. He could still be an all-NBA player next year. There's no question about it. My fear for this group of the Houston Rockets is this natural ascension that we talk about. That I was talking about earlier with the San Antonio Spurs. I'm not putting the Spurs and Victor Wembanyama in this class to win a championship or contend for championships next year, but there's this natural process that needs to happen that leads to a championship. Look no further than the Oklahoma City Thunder, right? It all started in the bubble. You reach the playoffs. You get there. You get a little taste of what that was. You lose last year in the second round, disappointing to the Dallas Mavericks. You use all of that, you learn from it, that experience gets you better, you come back next year and you win a championship. You need that. This Houston Rocket team, now with an incredibly talented young core, Amen Thompson's gonna challenge Victor Wembanyama for Defensive Player of the Year for the next several years to come. Alperen Şengün is one of the most skilled offensive centers we have in the game. Jabari Smith has a chance to be really special. Tari Eason, guys that we haven't even seen play yet, and Cam Whitmore and Reed Shepard. Love what this roster is. But now you drop a 37-year-old in Kevin Durant into this mix who is going to be expected and want to, rightfully so, compete for championships. I don't know that this young core of Şengün, Amen Thompson, and others
are ready for that. And quite frankly, what has Kevin Durant proven in his last two stops that leads you to believe that he's going to do anything to lift these guys up? Kevin Durant in his own right is going to be great. He's, again, he's going to be an all-star. He's going to be in consideration if he stays healthy, which, by the way, has not always been a guarantee. If he stays healthy, right, he's going to be in conversation for all NBA. But I just think it's a miscalculation to drop in this guy for however long and expect the rest of these guys to rise up to his level.
You said it's a mistake. You predicted that something like this would happen, but you also said it would be a mistake. I'm not sure it's a mistake. I have the same concerns you do. I have more practical concerns because I think Ime Udoka, as a leader, can sort of mitigate some of those other things. My thing is, how much are you practically putting on Kevin Durant to be the number one option offensively when his health and his age say this should not be the case? We don't have a template. We don't have a precedent for what KD, LeBron, and Steph are doing. So it's hard for me to say, hey, this is going to be okay because you got KD for a three-year window. Jared, I'm 100% with you in theory, but I felt like it was impressed upon me by an email I received a few days ago saying that Jared Greenberg was right. The sender was Jared Greenberg. So give Jared Greenberg, I thank you for such a thing. My man, really appreciate you.
You got it. Let's check in on Alperen Şengün halfway through the season, too. I'm going to, Dakota, mark that one, too. Alperen Şengün was better when Jalen Green was off the court. How is Alperen Şengün going to operate with his offensive skill with Kevin Durant on the court?
Let's see if Alperen Şengün is still there. Jarrett, we're going to see you at Summer League, my man. And thanks to everybody for listening to today's episode of The Good Word. Thanks to producer Dakota, who does all the things behind the scenes on this show. I'll be back next week with another episode as we preview and get into free agency. Until then, everybody be safe.